You're listening to The Mumcast, the best weekly comic book podcast recorded in Southampton, England on Thursday nights. Episode, we talk about this week's comics, and this week there'll be no spotlight. And where the night tonight are?
Hello, I'm Nick.
Hello, I am James.
Hello, I am Jane.
How are you two?
Yeah, alright. Cheers, good. Yeah, you? How are you? You alright?
I'm okay.
Light t-shirt.
Thank you. It's for the podcast listener, it is an environmentalist narrative.
There's a message.
There's a leaf. And the leaf gets steadily covered in oil across the middle of the t-shirt until the end, and he looks evil once he's covered in oil. Even though, or it might be six different leaves.
He starts smiling.
It looks a bit
as
like
well.
An angry bird at the end.
Yeah, he does. He kind of looks.
Well, no,
he
looks like a pig. From actually, no, he
from
does.
The crease,
yeah, no,
it
right,
looks
yeah.
a bit like an angry bird.
I think it's quite snug though, and I feel a bit sweaty. So I'm sorry, guys.
Oh, it suits you. It's very nice.
Being a bit sweaty.
What colour? So we can paint a picture. It's what would you say?
Charcoal.
It's charcoal. I like it. It's very slimming.
It's charcoal. It's nice.
And the leaf is green.
Leaves are green.
And then it's black.
Yeah.
So we painted a word picture for you, listeners. Mm. That's my t-shirt. What are you wearing, James? Shirt, tie, lanyard.
Chiffon dress.
Lanyard, work card.
I am wearing a lanyard. Got a lanyard on. It's got my name and one of my old job titles on it.
Before we get to Jane, I saw someone shared a link to a Doctor Who's Assistants thing on Twitter, and the way they shared it was Doctor Who Assistants talking about, it was a lady, so Doctor Who Assistants talking about feminism and stuff. Guardian, I think it was Guardian or BBC goes on about what they're wearing. Feminist fail or something like that. And I was like, okay, I need to see this because this sounds outrageous. So I went and looked, and basically the columns were just the... Is one of your tummies going?
Yeah, it's mine.
The columns were just the assistants, the female assistants, talking about their time as a female assistant, as an assistant on Doctor Who through time. And some of them were talking about the attitudes on the show and stuff. And then... underneath, there was a little thing just saying where each of the pieces of clothing they were wearing was from. Like you get on every single photo shoot in every single magazine, be it male or female. And I was like, well, maybe if everything's so peachy in the whole sexual equality, gender equality thing that feminists can afford to be going after stuff like that, maybe the world isn't as bad as I thought it was.
Well, that's a relief.
And then I thought, no, that person and people like them is an idiot, and the struggle continues. So Jane, wearing a black cardi thing,
a black 3/4 length cardigan.
Would you call that red wine, burgundy?
It's like a burgundy neck high top.
It's like not ruched. Quite swoop. It's not quite swooping neck, plunging neckline. It's nice ruched.
Sleeveless.
It's very fitting.
Yes,
very flattering, though.
Yeah.
It's nice.
And black trousers.
Nice. I can't see the black trousers. And where did each? How much did that outfit cost you, roughly, pulled together? £20. This
more
is what our
that.
Listeners tune in for. £30.
Hang on. I'll just. Where's my?
Do I hear £50?
I don't know. It depends where it came from. I don't know where my.
It's a very nice label. I think you can tell a lot about a piece of clothing from the quality of the label.
And it's got two labels, so that means it's probably a very expensive piece of clothing.
Yeah. A bit upper class.
Yeah, one for like a little bit of narrative about the cardigan.
Debenhams. It's from Debenhams.
Debenhams. So probably more money than
£20.
You'd expect. Yeah. But I like the buttons on the elbow that don't really serve a purpose.
No, but it's a lovely detail, isn't it? It really brings out the black in her eyes.
Because because it's quite a simple outfit, but that just makes it elegant rather than just simple.
Cheers, you are elegant, Jane.
We're being so sexist, pointing out that Jane is wearing clothes that are nice. Mm. Apparently.
But we said we liked your T-shirt.
Yeah, no, I know. It's just Twitter makes me so angry sometimes, you guys. So, Jane, how are you?
Okay.
How's your week been?
I'm very busy. Been doing lots of manual labour for my mum.
Oh.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's the only reason she had me.
Is it sexist to call it? Should it be personal?
Personal labour.
Although personal labour sounds a bit sex worky.
Non-gender specific labour.
Yes.
Yeah. Ladial labour.
So that was tiring.
And oh, man, what sort of building wall?
No, cutting down parts of a tree, tidying stuff up.
Poking rats with a stick.
No, there were no rats. My main job was spider remover because there was a spider's egg just outside the back door that had lots of spiders in it, and most of them found their way inside.
What do spiders' eggs look like?
They're just what they look like. I don't know, black, white?
Oh, I just sometimes in the garden I see all of these little. They're like little white bubbles. They don't look like they're natural, but they've obviously come from somewhere.
Yeah.
They're like clear bubbles.
No, that's monkey egg spores.
No, I don't know if that's spiders.
Eggs. I'm worried they're slug eggs.
No, I don't know.
Maybe they're dinosaur eggs.
No, not that size. They're more like frog spawn or something. They're just gross. I don't like them. I don't think they're frog spawn.
It's like somebody spat on something.
Well, no, they're like little little plastic clear bubbles, but they're not plastic. They're
like
slimy.
Foamy.
Yeah, well, they've got foam around them, but they're like the actual things are like little clear glass bubbles.
Have you had a broken bean bag in the garden?
No,
recently?
That's what they look like though. Mm. Only clear. They look like little jelly. Those things that you're talking about, which are awesome, but you can't have them around if you've got pets. You have to be really careful.
Agreed.
Did anything nice happen though, or was it all just manual labour? Did she make you food?
She made me cups of coffee.
She didn't make you nice mum's home cooking?
No, that's okay.
Okay.
She's old, she's cooked for me enough in my lifetime.
Okay, so did you cook for her?
No.
I just want to hear what you ate when you were there.
Oh, I didn't eat anything that was there.
Oh. How long were you there for?
All day.
I thought you were there for a few days. I got really confused. I thought you were there for like the whole weekend.
I was there for a day. No,
and she didn't eat anything.
Yeah, just didn't eat anything. No, I was there for a day. No, on Sunday it was just quite a chilled one. Finished watching the end of Hannibal, the series of Hannibal.
Oh yeah, was it? We're only in the first third of it. So, is it a satisfying first season?
Yes. Yeah.
Sets nice stuff up nicely for the next season.
Yeah. I wasn't completely sold when I first started watching it. I really like Mads Mikkelsen. He's really good as Hannibal Lecter, and a lot of the other characters are good, apart from the main guy.
He's a bit wet, isn't he?
Yeah, and also he was in a really bad film called Confessions of a Shopaholic, and I can't help but think of him in that bad film.
The thing I liked about it the most is how much effort goes into the food.
Also the corpses.
Yeah.
They're pretty spectacular.
Oh, for sure. But I think it's kind of the aesthetic in it. James hasn't seen it, so he doesn't know what we mean. When Hannibal cooks a meal, they've actually got a food designer who designs it all. So it always looks amazingly edible, but also kind of like bits of people.
Yeah, it's good. Yeah.
It's all like kind of like organic biological things, and it's just amazing.
You can't identify what the source of the meat would be.
Oh, it's amazing.
A bit like Tesco's beef burgers.
Yeah, just like that.
Topical.
Other beef burgers that we don't know what they're made of are available.
Other supermarkets put all sorts of shit in their burgers and all.
As well. I can't remember what I was going to say next. I wanted to ask James if he'd been listening to any albums recently.
Yes, I've been listening recently. I've done a couple of spins around it this week. I've been listening to They Might Be Giants' 1990 cut Flood.
My copy of that was a gift from a young lady that I loved very much called Jessie. I was with her for 2 months, and then she broke my heart by not wanting to be with me anymore.
Oh.
And then it took me a disproportionately long time to get over it.
Yeah,
but and then whenever I listened to that album,
years.
If it had been a shit album, it probably would have been okay, but yeah. I just listened to it lots.
No, it's really good.
You were talking about a particular song?
Yeah, Dead. I want that to be played at my funeral.
And how does that go?
It goes, I returned a bag of groceries accidentally taken off the shelf before the expiration date.
Yeah, I like
da,
it.
Da, 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 da.
I came back.
Hang on, that's too much
groceries.
Copyright.
Oh, yeah, that's true. I don't think it's close enough to their performance of it to even pass as the same thing, probably. But do you know the algorithm on YouTube that works out what songs are playing in the background of videos is very impressive.
Really?
It certainly used to be.
Okay.
I once did some video, took some video of my dogs faffing about, and there was a tiny little corner of the TV, and you could hear the program, and it was House, and the,
the
video.
Robin Thicke song.
No, no, it was House. The House MD, Hugh Laurie, and
Big
the video fan. The video got flagged up and said, we think this contains material from this Warner Brothers or whatever thing, House MD. And I was like, how the hell?
Yeah.
Most people wouldn't have been able to work that out. Mm. It was impressive. So you've been listening to Flood.
Yeah.
Which is one of those albums for me.
It's a
triggering album, really.
Yeah, sorry. Should have said. I've been getting picked up on my Magpie superstition.
By whom?
I was berated by a colleague at work. I think that
was it, Jane?
No.
No.
I think the colleague who berated me was put up to it by Jane.
No, absolutely not.
But they actually.
Jane likes you to be afraid.
They goaded me. They actually went, look, James, look, what's that on the roof over there? And I went, oh, and I saluted it and said, hello, Mr. Magpie, it's your family. She went,
She doesn't just do it to you, though.
Yeah.
Look, here's the thing. It's probably meaningless. But what does it cost you to be polite to a magpie? Really?
Exactly, exactly. Because what if you weren't polite to a magpie and something bad happened? The rest of your life, if you survive the bad thing, you'll be thinking to yourself, oh, fuck, I wish I'd been polite to that magpie now.
But what if something bad happened anyway? Would you think any different?
Like, no, I'd think, well, God, imagine how bad this would have been if I hadn't saluted the magpie.
I do want to ask, do you feel that having saluted magpies, it has sufficiently staved off the sorrow?
Oh, my life has been awesome.
So is it possible that, at least in your case, it's a bit of a waste of time? Maybe that ship sailed. Maybe that horse has bolted and left the door open.
I can't help myself at this point. It's become compulsive, particularly if I'm in a car. Like, I remember like a couple of months ago, I didn't do it. I fretted the whole journey.
Did you?
Yeah.
I am in the
to
last.
To be fair, my wife can be quite erratic these days.
In the last couple of weeks, I have, this can be my week actually.
How was your week, Nick?
The thing that's really stuck out in my week is that at some point something has happened to the laundry in our house. We kind of lost track. And so for the first time since my first set of socks that had days of the week on them that I got about 4 years ago, I've been wearing socks from the wrong days. And it's happened like two or three times in the last week. And so far, everything seems to be okay. But at the same time, I feel like I'm having a nervous breakdown.
Okay.
So I don't know.
So what day pants are you wearing then?
The pants don't have a day on them. I tend to wear one a week, so it's not really relevant. Well, I mean, depending on... I'm not an animal. Depends on how much soilage there's been.
Then you turn them inside out.
Yeah, you don't really have to worry about...
And then back to front.
You don't really have to worry too much about bottom soilage because if you're wiping properly, but there are other things that can get on pants.
Do you find since the advent of the flushable wipe, you get a lot more use out of underpants?
There are flushable wipes.
Yeah, since the advent of the flushable wipe, you can do it at least 2-3 weeks.
I don't
or
know
you
what
could just
a
use
the
Daily
wipe
Mail.
Is.
It's like a wipe that's flushable.
So like a tissue.
But moist.
Why would you want moist? Why would you want a moist?
Because it gets all the debris nicely off your bum, doesn't it?
That's
really I don't want to be getting liquid around my butt.
You've clearly not tried. Nick, try wiping your bum with paper, normal paper, then compare the results by wiping it with a moist towelette. I think you'll find the results are spectacular.
One of the most important things to me in this whole area, in this whole task...
Yeah.
Is the eventual feeling of dryness?
Yeah,
to the point where sometimes I have been slightly concerned that it might be the beginning of the onset of an OCD. At the point where you're actually hurting yourself a little bit because you want to be dry.
Nick, what do you wipe your son's bum with when he changes nappies?
Moist wipes, but he wears nappies.
If you wear pants, they're perfectly absorbent in terms of the amount of moisture coming out of a moist towelette. Mm. It's not like when you finish wiping your baby's bum, it's sopping with towelette fluid.
It's all right for him. Okay, there are things that I let him do that are okay for him that I would not do to myself. I would not, for example, sit in a soiled nappy for him. He seems fine with it.
But I bet his bum on the whole is cleaner than yours.
I couldn't possibly. I don't get to look at my butt.
You should tonight, when you go home tonight, should pull down your pants and say, "Amy, there's something I need you to do for me. Get the boy."
I suspect that one of the things that made me fall in love with Amy and decide to marry her it is her likely unwillingness to do something like that.
I think someone only really...
I mean, not just because if she, in the throes of passion in the bedroom, who knows what will happen, but because I went up to her and asked her, I think one of the things I like about her is that she will say, no.
I think someone only truly loves you when they're prepared to look at your bum when you've got some sort of bum query or distress.
In a few minutes, we're going to start talking about comics. We are a comic book podcast. That's what we do. We are, in fact, the best weekly comic book podcast recorded on Thursday nights in Southampton. I'm pretty sure I'm missing some of it. But so far, nobody else has started recording a podcast on the same night as us in Southampton. So goodness knows. Goodness knows.
Yeah.
You can talk to us about comics or whatever takes your fancy on Twitter. You can talk. The main account for us is Momb Comics, but you can also find James at
James Momb. I've changed my Halloween version now,
but you can still search for the same.
Yeah, I'm James Momb Voorhees.
Okay, or Jane at
Jane Momb.
Okay, have you changed your name for Halloween? I was going to try and change mine. I'm Nick Sight. I was going to try and change mine to I don't really care about Halloween. It seems a bit American to me, Sight, but it wouldn't let me.
All right. No, I quite like the James Momb Voorhees because it's a little bit like Jason, isn't it?
The thing is, my name doesn't really lend itself to anything like that, I don't think. Nicotine. No, it doesn't really work. So that's us. There's also John Momb. It's spelt without a H. He's here some weeks. He's been here quite a lot recently.
He has. I don't know what's going on. I don't know whether there's trouble at home and he don't want to go.
Do you think there might be?
Maybe.
He's hoping that we'll stage some sort of intervention or something.
It's not going to happen.
It's a big, you okay, hun, cry for help.
I got enough of my own shit going on.
Yeah, okay. Well, we don't need to talk about that. You can also email us with contributions. We like 2 to 5 minute audio contributions for the show about comics or anything like that you want to talk about that will go in the show. Or just to tell us stuff or to send us stuff or to send us things that you want to put in James's mouth, which he'll explain about later on.
Yeah, put something in my mouth. I've got one today, but I've all run out after that.
You would do that using your standard email application, and you would send that email to
momcast@gmail.com.
That's nice.
Yes. You can see what we're up to and see what we're up to. See what John's up to in terms of writing reviews and stuff. Or listen to all of our past episodes or look at the show notes for this show or previous shows at momcomics.com.
I believe that content's all free as well.
It is. It's all free.
For a good
you don't
price.
Have to pay anything except a tiny little sliver of your soul, if you even believe in such a thing. And if you don't believe in such a thing, you've got nout to lose, have you? I don't know what that was. I'm sorry. It felt like something came over me. We're also on Facebook and Google Plus and Tumblr. There are links to all of those at the top right of momcomics.com. You can also subscribe to us. You can use iTunes or any podcatcher that you choose to. I use Pocket Casts. I know James uses iTunes. And if you want to leave comments, you can either do that on our website or on Facebook or on the podcatcher of your choice. Apparently, if you leave us comments on iTunes, they kill a fairy.
Something like that. It's meant to sort of boost you up the thing. I think it's too late for us. We're never going to be new and noteworthy now, Nick.
But I want to be new and noteworthy.
Tough.
Okay. I'm sorry, everybody. But, so that's it. That's all of the things. That's the admin. That's done.
You know the dude from History of Rome's got a new podcast out?
Has he?
I bet that'd
Do you want to talk about
that
in the awkward middle bit?
How about?
if you want to.
Not really.
Should we talk about this week's comics?
Yeah.
Who wants to go first? We haven't really worked this out. It felt very important that we work out a schedule last week. James did point at Jane first, but Jane's smiling much nicer than he is. No, now he's smiling. It's really creepy. They're both just smiling at me. I think they might be about to eat me.
You should go first.
Oh, okay, I'll go first. Right, so you've got that one. Mm-hmm. You've got that one. So we'll both talk about that. Right. Lazarus number 4, Greg Rucker and Michael Lark's nearish future, recognisably not too distant futury, political, intriguing family drama thing continues. It's gorgeous. I've talked a lot about it at length in the past. It's basically set in a world that has been apportioned out between a bunch of different families. Each family has their Lazarus, which is a kind of their enforcer. And the story follows Forever, who is the enforcer for the Carlyle family. And she's badass. What we find out in this issue is that not everything that she knows is necessarily true, among other things. And the family themselves, it's all very Roman Empire style. Someone in the letters pages referred to Game of Thrones, which I think was a little bit unfair, because this style of conniving family thing goes back a long way. But In the first issue, I think I said a little bit that it seemed too unrecognizable, too, like, it was odd because it felt recognizable, but the world was just a bit difficult to imagine how it got that way. But it becomes more grounded and sort of more easy to relate to as time goes on. It's great, though, and it looks gorgeous. Greg Rucker can make... can totally sell a world like this. And Forever's plight is totally believable. She's never sexualized at all as well, which is just quite amazing for an image comic with a any comic with a female character on the front of it. The Star Wars number 2, $3.99 from Dark Horse. The front cover of this one says The Empire Strikes, but it is not. That's just a clever little link to the actual Star Wars films as they ended up happening. This is a comic based on George Lucas's original rough draft screenplay, so not his original treatment, but the thing he wrote, I guess, when he was about 18. I don't think he was as young as 18, but sometimes it feels like the sort of space opera that an 18-year-old might have written. It's really good, I guess. It's gorgeous looking. Mike Mayhew is like giving us fully painted, looks like fully painted work. Colours by Rain Barredo. As I'm talking about the paintwork, I guess kind of the colour work on it. It's amazing. There's a script by J.W. Rinsler, who I've not heard of before. There was a variant cover by Ralph McQuarrie, but that's not the one I've got. When I talked about the first issue, I talked a little bit about the weird, almost uncanny valley feeling of having these characters and these settings that were similar but actually very different as well. It's really odd. It's a really odd book to read. And the problem is that I think in this issue it's also a little bit disorienting. It's also a little bit all over the place as well. It doesn't, in the first issue at least, you got introduced to characters, and it's got a much larger cast than Star Wars. The one thing that it really makes you feel is that the original version of Star Wars, A New Hope, as was originally in cinemas, is a really tight film. The focus of it is really tight. You're following this very small band of characters, whereas this is much more world building. It's obvious that a younger George Lucas was into sort of building this whole universe and had this really complicated. It's peculiar because it makes you feel like the bit at the beginning, the crawl at the beginning of episode 1, that everyone said, well, it's all about politics and nonsense and trade agreements and stuff, was kind of what George Lucas would have done in the first place had he had just a limitless budget and was allowed to do anything. So I think more and more it's starting to look like A New Hope was a bit of a fluke. It was something that he managed to come up with once he had limitations forced on him.
don't even think it was a fluke in the script. It was saved in the edit. It was still a bit of a
all over the
a wreck bit. Of a film until it was tightened down in the edit. From what I can make out.
It's a fun read. There's some cute stuff going on. It is gorgeous to look at. The early version of the Death Star turns up. I don't think it's really spoiling. It's on the cover. So it's an early version of the Death Star, but it's not really recognisable as the Death Star. There's two familiar droids turn up. It's very pretty. It's a bit of an oddity. And I had one of those moments... at work today. I was reading this during my lunch break, and a couple of my colleagues are, you know, comic friendly, really. And I had one of those moments where I had it really pushed in my face how weird this whole world is that we kind of inhabit. Mm. Because he said to me, he asked me what it was, and I said, oh, it's the Star Wars. And he said, oh, not Star Wars, that's weird. What is it? Is it like a follow-on from the films? And I said, or something, or except like a story, a prequel or something. And I said, no, it's they've taken George Lucas's early draft and they've made a comic of it. I explained roughly what it was. And he said, oh, why have they done that then? Have they sort of run out of, are they running out of content or something? And I was like... You know, it's a really good question, because it just seems to me like they did it because it seemed like it'd be interesting, and that's kind of the thing. But it is kind of difficult to rationalise otherwise.
It's one of the few books that when I say I'm waiting for the trade, I'm genuinely waiting for the trade. I'm really excited to read it. I think it's a really cool idea, because there was some concepts I'm aware of in the original drafts that weren't in that I'd really like to see brought to reality. I think as far as Star Wars completists are concerned... It's a really exciting book to be coming out at the moment.
It's interesting. I mean, as you know, I'm not... And I do spend an awful lot of time thinking, well, how much of this is interpretation and how much this was in his script? Mm. Because they are clearly... the people writing it and putting it together are also clearly influenced by what the Star Wars universe ended up being.
Of course.
So it's kind of hard to see... certain things happen and you're like, well, is that in the draft or are they doing that as a cute nod to happened?
Most of the character designs, I assume, are from Macquarie's originals,
I guess. Yeah, there's some interesting stuff going on with R2-D2 and C-3PO.
Is R2-D2 like a weird sort of three-legged... I know he's a weird three-legged creature, but he's really gangly in Macquarie's.
R2-D2's almost the same, actually.
But C-3PO is a lot more Metropolis.
Yeah. That is the case. Hmm. 2000 AD, Prog 1852 was possibly my favourite issue for the most consistently good issue for quite some time, which is why I'm mentioning it. The Brass Sun is great, continues to feel more like a Ghibli cartoon than anything else in 2000 AD. There was some really nice art in Flesh this week. I don't always get on with McKay's art, but we find out a little bit more about the sort of half-breed human dinosaur-y things. As much as I miss Lee Gallagher on Aquila, Patrick Goddard's art is pretty good, is really good actually. And Gordon Rennie's writing's just great, and there's a wolf in it.
Is Goddard's art coloured in that?
Yeah.
Oh wow! I must admit, I'm so familiar seeing it in Savage.
It's very odd. It's odd.
I bet, yeah.
Seeing both him, and because Lee Gallagher's was coloured as well when he was on it, so it is odd because those are artists I tend to associate with black and white. And the I've been having a bit of trouble getting to grips with Damnation Station because I don't really know the backstory to it. But this issue of it, this episode of it, written by Al Ewing with art by Mark Harrison, feels like a completely standalone. It could be set in any future war setting. It could be set in the Starship Troopers universe. It's just a really tight one episode story. I don't know if the character in it is going to have anything to do in later episodes. It just feels like a pause beat. It's like, I think, the third episode of it, and it feels like a pause out of the story and a really horrible and poignant little character story told in it. So it was really good. I enjoyed 2000 this week. I always enjoy it a bit, but it felt like a really consistent read this week. And shall I segue into one of yours by talking about one of this? Who wants to go next?
I'll go next.
Okay. Hinterkind from Vertigo.
Yeah.
$2.99. Written by Ian Edgington, with art by Francesco Trifogli, and a cover by... oh gosh, it's amazing. And he did Greg Tocchini, or Tocchini,
yeah,
who I knew from The Last Days of American Crime, which is a Rick Remender series from a few years back. It's an amazing cover. Do you want to talk about it, Jane?
Yeah. It's a not post-apocalyptic, but the human race has diminished incredibly, and civilization as we know it does not exist in this era. It's not spoiling too much, but one of the first shots you see two people hunting as if mm-hmm. they were in a rainforest or something. And actually, when it pans out to this gorgeous splash page, is a city engulfed in just green, you know, foliage. It's just, you know, there's trees and bushes everywhere and grass. It's just incredible to look at.
It's a very specific city as well, isn't it? It's New York.
Yeah.
You can see the Sears Tower, I think it is, or the Empire State. I always get mixed up.
Once called New Amsterdam.
Was it? Why they changed it, I can't say.
People just liked it better that way.
Oh, God. And you realise they're actually on top of a building hunting. Sets the tone for the story. The story is about about people surviving after whatever's happened we don't know about. They have contacts, it seems, in other cities that they haven't actually seen but have been in radio contact with, and slowly they've been losing contact and they don't know why. So their group of people are trying to decide whether or not they should go and find out what happened. The story was really good. It wasn't really until I got to the end I was like,
It sets the scene. It sets up the human experience really,
yeah,
really,
really
nicely.
Good.
And then there are things that happen in the last act of this issue,
yeah,
aren't there? That kind of, because you are shown very, very quickly that things might not be right,
yeah,
in the other townships.
Absolutely.
Or the other hamlets.
Oh, absolutely,
or whatever.
Yeah, yeah, you are given sort of a bit of an indication, but it's really great way of showing how the humans are surviving, and you know, you don't know what's happened, but there is some sort of predatory aspect to it that you mm-hmm. don't know about, and it is just really good. It's just, I can't wait for the next issue. I think it's going to be really good.
It was really good,
yeah,
wasn't it?
I just there's so many possibilities. There's just so much story in it already. You can see it.
I quite liked as well that one of the things I've often said about Ian Edgington's writing is there are lots of stories he does that I really, really like, and lots of these peculiar worlds he builds. But I'm so used to seeing his work in 2000 AD, and I've always said that it's like he's really, really good, but then the 2000 AD structure where you have the five-page episodes, and kind of the last one has to do, the whole climax has to be in a five-page thing, means that his ideas and his writing doesn't always have that much room to breathe. And in this issue, it does feel, I kept forgetting that it was him, because him writing it, because it did feel really expansive, and like it's gonna, it feels like lots happens in this first issue.
It does, yeah.
But at the same time that it's taking its time, you don't feel rushed.
Oh, absolutely
along, really.
Not. No, you get to know the characters, you get to understand their situation a bit better. It's just, you get a glimpse of everyday life, and it isn't rushed through. But yeah, it was so good. I was quite surprised how much I enjoyed it. I had no idea what it was going to be about. The covers.
I just really like the cover.
Yeah, the cover.
That's why I bought
it. Cool. And the art's amazing, and the colour palette's really nice as well. Just the hues of the green. You don't look at it and think that's a city that's just been left to decay. You just see life, which is part of the sort of narrative that goes with the story. There is a narrator in mm-hmm. some parts, and how Mother Nature has reclaimed her land, and that's how it feels. It comes across in the artwork. It's not like these massive buildings are just looking out of place because they've got, you know, they've grown sort of trees and grass on them. It just kind of fits in, and that's how it should be, which is really, really nice. Yeah, really enjoyed that.
It's got quite nice. The characters are quite, although they're kind of archetypal at this point. There's the girl with the bow and arrow who's clearly one of our main protagonists, and her friend, her male friend, and the grandfather who's a really strong like leader in the group.
Yeah.
But they're all quite likable as well. There's not a lot of.
Oh, yeah.
The conflict within their group is quite gentle. They're all quite likeable.
Yeah, and it's more about worrying about people's safety than it is about doing something they disagree with or they've got a different opinion. It is, they're very aware. You get the feeling that they're quite aware that they're a diminishing race.
Yeah.
Within a, not race, sorry, species within this story. But really liked it.
It's interesting because I hadn't even thought about it when I read it earlier on, but Ian Edgington is also writing Brass Eye. Not Brass Eye. Brass Eye is a different thing. Brass Sun in 2000 AD. And that's kind of... Both are very different from things I've read by him before and really different from anything else. But they're both about a young boy and girl who end up in a really unusual world. In Brass Sun, it's completely unfamiliar, though. But they've both got quite a similar sort of... It's a very threatening universe they're in, but the tone is relatively... Well, it's not serene, because there is threat in this issue. There is more than mild peril, but the greenery and everything, it is just a beautiful world.
Yeah.
Kind of get the feeling that the humans are the anomaly in it.
They've adapted quite well.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. It's good. I liked it.
Yeah. The second book I got this week was issue 9 of Bedlam from Image Comics, written by Nick Spencer with art by Ryan Brown and the covers by Fraser Irving. I'm glad I finished watching Hannibal, because I think that combined of reading Bedlam, I had some really weird dreams last night.
Mm-hmm.
You know when you're half asleep and half awake, but you start dreaming and then something horrific happens and you wake up and your heart's pounding? That was a direct result of reading Bedlam.
Really? Yeah, that was quite cool.
In the last issue, we see sort of like a mass suicide. So in one, in the city, there's a group of people in different locations who've decided to blow themselves up. And other people in the city have all just gone to the top of the building and jumped off. That's what my dream was about. People in my office jumping off a building.
Isn't that also... Never mind.
They weren't people I worked with.
All right.
They're trying to figure out what's happened. We're still with Madden and the police detective. I can't remember her name off the top of my head. And they're trying to they're really trying to find out how this has happened, how so many people from different backgrounds, different jobs, you know, completely unconnected people all do the same thing. And in the office, it's not everybody in their office. It's people are, you know, just random people getting up and going.
Mm.
And we're still getting the flashbacks of Madden when he was not healthy and his relationship with the superhero of the city. I will just get his name, actually, because it just escaped me.
There's a superhero in the city.
Yes, there is. Yeah.
Silver Chap.
He is a Silver Chap.
That's what he's called, Silver Chap.
I
am Silver Chap.
His name is The First. And we're seeing flashbacks of him and Madden. So he's encountered Madden before, even though now he's been rehabilitated and is helping the police. It's so good. It's so creepy and precise. And, you know, it's just a puzzle. Everything's a puzzle that you have to work out, which I really like as well. But the characters are so well done in this. They are really, really good, and the fact that it gave me a mini nightmare I think just shows how much this book really sort of leaves an impression with me.
Is there a trade of the first few issues
of
that now?
Yes, there is, yeah.
Might have to seek it out. It does look, it's a really great looking, the covers are always good.
Yeah, Fraser Irving's covers are incredible, they're so good. And he has a very limited colour palette. Well, it's got a limited colour palette, which makes it more sort of intriguing. And the art inside is just so good. It's really, really good. Again, the colour palette in it. I should mention the colours. As I forgot to mention, there are three additional names on the cover. And I was like, oh, who are they? And it's the colourist, the colour... Oh, it just says colours. John Paul Kosaka. Letters by Kelly Tyndall and designed by Tim Daniel, and all their names feature on the front cover. I thought that was a nice touch.
Steady on there. Actually, it is worth mentioning, sorry, because we did talk about the colour in Hinterkind, and it's coloured by Chris Peter, who is not someone I'd heard of before.
No.
I was thinking, if I see a book that looks nice now, I just assume it's either Dave Stewart or Geordie Bellaire. But none of these have been so far. So.
Yeah. And because everything is quite erratic but calm at the same time, so when the story is at a calm pace, and then when you're having... There have been scenes all throughout where you've got someone who's giving a narrative, a character is giving a narrative, and there's other things happening in each scene. So he's describing a very horrific, chaotic thing, but in a very calm way. But every scene you see, it's getting more and more sort of, oh my God, this is getting a bit. And that just is such a unique feature to this particular story. I found it's really, really good.
I'm almost completely unmoved by most of the things I read now. It's really weird. Something has to be so... The Road, the novel, because it was so relentless, I think, did it. But most comics I read, I'm like, oh, yeah, it's cool. I appreciate where this narrative is going, but only really TV ever seems to get to me. And I think that's because it's passive. I don't know why that is. It's nice to hear that you have nightmares because of a comic, because it takes a really sustained effort from a book to impact on me that way, I think.
Do you think that's age? Because it's only music really guarantees to get a proper emotional response out of me now.
Everything with
and the Railway Children.
Everything with a slightly plaintive female vocal on it that I listened to today almost reduced me to tears. It was ridiculous. When I'm tired or a bit stressed out, music does it, but it doesn't even feel like it feels Pavlovian with music.
I think I attach emotion to certain songs because as you do for whatever scenario, but there is new music that has no emotional attachment that can give me goosebumps, but that's the extent to music. Films, but it has to be on the top. What topic is The Road? I haven't read the book. The reason I haven't read the book is I've read the film and I was watched the film. I was inconsolable afterwards. I would not stop crying.
I don't know if I'll be able to watch the film or read the book again now that I'm a parent.
But The Underwater Welder, that reduced me to tears as well. It takes a lot for
me
to cry.
Yeah, that's what I mean. You and John still have these reactions to comics, and I don't. Journey into Mystery, the final Kieran Gillen issue of that, did surprise me because it did have an impact, but I mean, I'm just, it takes a lot to move the needle. It's a,
I had a
cool way of putting it. I hope you enjoyed that, listener.
I had a dubstep version of Babylon Zoo Spaceman the other day, and I couldn't stop crying for 15 minutes.
Oh, I didn't enrage you then.
I think that was with rage, was it?
No, I was just so emotional.
James, what have you got to talk about?
One book that did move me emotionally this week was Solid State Tank Girl.
Do you want to say it or shall I about the cover? About what our friend Warwick Johnson Cadwell.
You can see Booger's nuts.
You can see a bollock.
Well, you can see
there's
a
bollock on the cover.
There's a nut. You can see his nut. Johnson, and these are by up and coming writer Alan C. Martin and Warwick Johnson Cadwell, who apparently is an artist. And this is the fourth issue of this particular storyline featuring Anti-Tank Girl, and it's a very, very thoughtful, very still comic. It's very much Tank Girl going and meditating on what it is to be an empowered female in the early part of the 21st century.
You're joking around a little bit, but there are some surprising moments of poignance in this issue.
I am taking a piss. There is massive poignance and real depth, actually, and a very strong feminist message in Tank Girl. No, of course, it's lots of swearing.
It's demented. It's a completely demented issue.
It's fucking nuts, isn't it? And it's Tank Girl takes on Anti-Tank Girl, the baby that they found growing in Booger's nuts in the first issue. And at this point, she's grown into an evil pink monster that represents essentially everything that is wrong with the brainwashing of young women in the early part of the 21st century.
At least that's how Tank Girl reads it.
It is. But, of course, there's quite a lot of... There's a very, very laid on really heavy feminist sort of storyline. And then, of course, Alan C. Martin just subverts that at the end, and it's not that at all. And it's not... And it confounds your expectations whilst remaining to be absolutely fucking insane from page 1 to page 22. And, frankly, I loved it. I'd never want to read Tank Girl again if Warwick isn't drawing it, frankly. Mm-hmm. It works perfectly. We said this after the first issue, but it captures the frenetic, anarchic, punk nature of Tank Girl perfectly. And whilst not looking like Jamie Hewlett's art... James...
Isn't James Hewlett...
Yeah, the guy at the...
No, James Hewlett, isn't he the Prince William's dad or something?
Something like that.
I didn't know that.
And he... friends with us, which is good, but he's got that punk ethos, and while, you know, the art isn't as polished as James Hewlett's art from the early 90s, the same anarchic spirit remains now. I absolutely love it. It is proper punk, isn't it? Mm. It's awesome. Such a fun comic book.
It's kind of nuts.
Nuts because you can see Booger's nut on the front cover.
I think I've enjoyed it. I've enjoyed it throughout, and I always like Warwick's art. But I think it gelled the most in this issue.
For sure, it
is just crazy. And I lost track a little bit of what the final payoff was on the story, but that's Alan Martin. It's just nuts.
I love that sometimes there's subtlety. I love the heavy-handed nature of the I'm Jetgo and I'm going to kick you. It's like, brilliant, this is who I am, this is what I'm going to do. You don't need any more from your dialogue, do you? Job done.
Job's a good one. Yeah. Job done, innit, Ray Winston?
I'm James and I'm going to kick the table accidentally.
That wasn't accidental. You're anarchic in a way that only someone who's nearly 40 can be.
I met some anarchists at the weekend. Fucking hell, they're bossy.
Are they a bit tiring?
They're bossy and they want to organise you. It's like, I thought you were a fucking anarchist.
Are they not also quite, like, object-oriented?
Yeah, they are. Oh, yeah, they like free shit and all. The next book I'm going to talk about, I haven't spoken about for some time. I know that because I'm a little bit behind picking up my books, and I had to pick up four of them. So I got to read this in a four-book frenzy last night. It is published by Image Comics. It is... probably costs something. $2.99.
It definitely costs something.
It does. It costs $2.99. It's Mind of the Gap, written by Jim McCann, and art by Rodin Esquero for the present... and Dan McDade, who draws the past. Mind the Gap is the story of Ellie, who, when we first met, she's fallen into a coma, looks like a mysterious hoodie's attacked her, and there's been all this intrigue around who attacked her, why they attacked her, why are her family so deeply unpleasant, and focusing on characters like her boyfriend and characters in the hospital and so forth. And the early part of the story really was around suspecting everyone. So the early part of the story was all about, you know, what were people's motivations, what were they up to and so forth, while at the same time Ellie's soul, or possibly her subconscious, are in a strange limbo called the Garden, where apparently it would seem she's capable of going into people's bodies who are near death, basically saying their goodbyes from then, and then offing them, essentially. The story has kind of progressed over the last few months, so we kind of now know what the motivations are, and what we're seeing now is a really intriguing mix of Ellie's story in the present, and it's really deep, really complex, and I'm really enjoying it. It's not really gone... without wishing to do it a disservice, it felt kind of like an analogue cookie-cutter sort of mystery. It was sort of like... it just felt like a whodunit with a bit of weirdness thrown on for intrigue, and I was enjoying the story as it was, but it was a little bit... it wasn't blowing my brains out. Whereas there's layers of complexity and subtlety have been added to the story, especially with the backstory, understanding the motivators of Ellie's family and what they're up to. And actually, rather than being a straight story of black and white, the good guys versus the good guys, mm-hmm. there's now...
The bad guys, the good guys versus the bad guys.
What did I say?
Good guys versus the good guys.
I thought I said the bad guys versus the good guys.
No.
So good guys versus the good guys.
Well, instead
you're tripping, yo.
You can... Yeah, I'm going to go out gangbanging for show.
Mm.
You can.
You're not going to do that.
No, probably not. I'm going to go home and have some tea. You can edit this together so it makes sense. So it's not about good guys versus the bad guys. There's all these massive shades of grey now on the situation. You're not really sure. It's not who to trust, but who to believe in. Who's doing the right thing? Who's motivated for the right reasons? And it's almost like the good guys, they know more about the bad guys. The good guys are a bit naive. Now it's just amazing.
How high up does this go?
Exactly. And as well, Ellie's story in the garden has got even more complex as well, and asks interesting stories about the boundaries between asks interesting questions about the boundaries between life and death. It's being collected in trade at the moment. I think you can probably get up to issue 12 in trade, I imagine, at the moment. I believe so.
Is that in two trades?
Two trades, yeah. I really highly recommend it. It is so rewarding at this point. I am loving it. And the mixture of Esquero and McDade's art doing the present and the past is lovely. It works so well.
It hasn't the done style that since the beginning, has it?
It hasn't, no. It's only in the last sort of, in this storyline. So since issue 13, I think it started. But it's lovely, and the tone and the palette changes so nicely as well. It's really, it's gone from being a book that I'm happy enough to have on my standing order and I'm enjoying it, so I think after picking up the last four issues, I think it might have jumped up to pretty much one of my favourite books I'm reading at the moment. It's really, really enjoyable.
You haven't sounded that bothered about it before.
No, and it's now at this point it's using the medium really well. I kind of get it as a monthly sort of serial drama as well. It's great.
I'm glad you like it. I read the first issue. I do want to read that at some point because it's it is really pretty. And I aside from some heavy-handed Pink Floyd references in the first issue, I did like it.
And some of that stuff still pays off. But it's one of the, you know how it is sometimes with stories that it's almost like a sort of, you know, like a spaceship on the, and it's sort of like it's lovely looking at the spaceship.
Mm-hmm.
But it only gets really exciting when it takes off, and it's sort of after issue 12.
It's like a spaceship that's finally taken off.
It is.
That's their... listen, if you're the people publishing Mind the Gap and you choose to use that, it's like a spaceship that's finally taken off. That wasn't me. I'm flattered. I am flattered. But that was James. That's entirely James. I just took it out of the context of the run-on sentence that he was doing and gave it a bit of punch, that's all.
Thank you.
Has anything happened this week?
Oh, do you know, I was on that internet the other day.
That internet?
I use a social media thing called Twitter, and it's...
All right, what's that about?
It's where people can just shout shit at the wall until they're hoarse.
Shout out shit at the wall.
And Rob Liefeld.
No.
I thought you were really going somewhere with that then. I'm really disappointed.
Bit worried about some eyebrow hairs that seem to be growing out of control. I don't know what to do about that.
Rob Liefeld.
No, mine.
Oh. My hair.
Liefeld looks like he keeps his eyebrows in beautiful, Nick.
I am beautiful, thank you. He keeps them in me. That's weird.
Jane's looking at a little mirror right now, and that's freaking me out.
You know who's got beautiful eyelashes?
Jane.
My boy Noah. Oh.
Yeah, of course he is.
I wanted to talk about. I wanted to mention last week this because I had a when I was off work for a day. And I was off sick, and I was supposed to be going out with colleagues from work, but instead I was at home without my wife. And so about 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock, I thought, oh, I'll have a look at Oglaf, the webcomic. I haven't looked at that in quite some time. I like it. It's a bit rude, but it's also quite funny, and it's beautifully drawn. And so I looked at that, and then for the next half hour to an hour, ended up looking at lots of different erotic webcomics for whatever reason. Only the beautifully drawn erotic webcomics for me. But then I ended up, I was still looking at webcomics at about 10 o'clock at night, like just all sorts of different ones. And it's something that ever since my RSS reader of choice pretended to fall apart, which was Bloglines, and then it ended up being rescued, but I'd already decamped Google Reader and then realized I couldn't really use Google Reader because it tired me out, so wasn't following any blogs anymore. My webcomic reading has gone almost completely downhill. I just don't read any anymore. But midway through the erotic webcomics, but it might have been once I'd started reading the not erotic webcomics anymore, I ended up seeing an ad for a couple of different webcomic readers, or someone did a blog post after Google Reader got cancelled. I think one of the webcomics was saying, if Google Reader's going, so you might be looking for another way to read your webcomics, here's a couple of different services. I can't remember what the other one was, but I ended up getting an account at Comic Rocket, which is free, and they've got a really nice app. And what you do is you go through and you subscribe to all of these webcomics, and depending on how the webcomic's own site is laid out, because it's still mainly... most of it all still takes place on their own site. It's really good because it tracks how far you are in.
Oh, that's good.
How far you are, you've read through and stuff like that. So I was binge reading quite a lot of stuff. It also, and this is why I'm not sure if we've talked about this before or if Tim, specifically Timothy Swan, I think may have talked about this before, because there's a service that is included in this, but is a slightly, I think, has been developed as a separate service, which is designed to encourage you to binge read. If you've got a backlog of webcomic episodes or pages to read, it kind of parcels them out to you in chunks. So he may have talked about this before, but it's worth your time. Comic Rocket, they've got a really nice, desktop or browser like app or interface, but there is also an app that you can get on Android, and I'm guessing probably on iOS as well. Unfortunately, it's always worked absolutely fine at home, but here it's saying Comic Rocket requires a network connection to work, so I can't show you it. But it's a really slick and lovely interface. I can recommend it.
Does it cost anything in Android or
I don't
iOS?
Think, no, it's
you said
free.
It was free.
Yeah. The service itself is free, and I don't think the app costs anything either. But it's really nice.
The service was free, but you didn't mention the app price.
And
smarty pants.
I always forget this, that there is some such... and people who read a lot of webcomics try and remind you of this all the time. But some of the work going on... some of the writing is really good, but some of the art is just out of this world amazing. And I think it might have been Brian Lee O'Malley who said it, but it might have been someone else who referred to webcomics as the actual comics as the dinosaurs, and as the big dinosaurs, and webcomics are kind of like the little ones that are around the... they don't even...
the little mammals, maybe.
Yeah, they don't even really impact on each other. They're operating in completely different ecosystems. But they're still comics. And some of them are really, really good. Unfortunately, I can't get this open, so I can't tell you any of the ones I discovered. But most of them are probably a bit rude anyway. I'm apparently fine with mainly homoerotic comics.
Unsurprising.
Well, I'm not homophobic at all, but generally when I'm reading erotic comics, it's because... as much for titillation as anything else.
Yeah, of course.
But if it's beautifully drawn, apparently I can just read about any sorts of relationships. I'm fine.
Oh, there you go. Thank you, Nick.
It's good. And the other thing I wanted to mention is the Alex DeCampi Kickstarter. They're kind of tied into each other, webcomics and Kickstarter, the fringe comics not coming out from traditional venues. Alex DeCampi's very storied and at one point troubled Kickstarter campaign for the book Smoke and Ashes, or I think one of the books in it was called Smoke and the other one was called Ashes, that where there were lots of issues with the artists that she had, but she ended up having lots of guest artists, some of whom are amazing. Now, I did, I don't know what you call it, pledge?
Yeah, you pledged.
Excuse
yeah.
me, yeah. Bless you. I did pledge in on it at the time before the deadline. And I did read the issues as she made them available, because that was one of the things that I was entitled to, were the digital issues as they became made available. And it looked nice. It wasn't... It didn't move me particularly. There were some really nice ideas in there and really nice moments. But overall, it didn't necessarily deliver on the amount of buzz and noise and news that had surrounded it. But I pledged $30, which is around £18 sterling. At the moment it's around £18 sterling, and I think it's been stable at that for a little while. I had completely forgotten that entitled me to the collection when it eventually came out. The collection has come out from Dark Horse. It's a hardcover, but in a hard slipcase as well, that's absolutely beautiful, and the retail value on it is something like $60. It's a really good idea to keep an eye out for Kickstarters, people. This was a very high profile one, and I follow a comic writer called Vera Green Tea, and I've got a few of her things through Kickstarter as well, because she's really good and she tends to work with really good artists too. And one of the things she was saying was that Kickstarter used to be a really good venue for people like her to get stuff done, and she doesn't know if she was starting out now instead of 2 years ago, it would still be as useful, because a lot of the smaller projects and the indie projects, the ones that aren't like really high profile, kind of sink to the bottom of the site quite a lot. But as I've probably said a little bit since New Year's, the way the internet could work and should work, and things like Kickstarter should work and webcomics should work, is they give you the opportunity to not just get the stuff that your comic shop's stocking and putting on the shelves, not just listen to the music that the big labels are putting out and all of that stuff. If there are people you know or people you don't know but who are smaller scale putting out something you like, promote the hell out of it, contribute to it. You don't have to buy every single crossover issue of whatever Marvel are doing. There's some really interesting stuff out there. And the upside is, I just got an amazingly good-looking $60 book for $30 that I spent a year ago.
It's a steal.
It's surprising. I was surprised. I'd forgotten it was coming out. I have a sneaking suspicion that after all the problems that she had on that project, she did end up giving you more than you contributed for, if that makes sense. But still, I mean, can't say fairer than that. I effectively got it at cost, didn't I?
Pretty much, I'd say. Yeah. It's a very expensive looking book.
Yes. So, do it. I'm not going to take it out and show it to the microphone because it's in bubble wrap.
Or the book.
Yeah. That's in bubble wrap too.
Good.
Thanks, Nick.
Does anyone else have anything that's happened this week in comics? Comics has been relatively scandal light recently, hasn't it? Or have I just missed a lot of it?
I'm worried I've missed it all.
It must still be out there. It's not like suddenly fewer assholes are in the business.
I'm sure Card Scott Orson must have been up to something.
Possibly. A couple of people have started asking about Thought Bubble, both publicly and privately. Jane and I and life partner Steve, we're all booked, aren't we?
Yeah, it's got sort of train tickets out.
Yes, so we will be at Thought Bubble Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday morning, and we will probably be go. We've already been invited for our Friday night curry.
Have we?
Well, not invited, but someone's already started talking about it. James, don't you start looking sad. Don't be so jealous and envious. That is, just stop. Stop it.
Yeah, so, all right, okay, we're being booked up fast then.
One of our fellow podcasty friends has said, so pub, curry, and hipster in indie hipster pub.
Oh, that was good.
It was a good pub,
year.
Wasn't it?
Oh, that was a good
and
combination.
We found the perfect breakfast place as
yes,
well.
Yes,
so.
We have, yeah. We're all set.
It's grubby, James. Oh,
and we'll
you'd
leave
love it.
Sunday night was nice and unpredictable last year and ended up being 14 people going out for a meal. It was really really lovely people. That was really good.
James, next year, come on.
Oh, I'm
don't
just
be
looking
like that.
Forward to hugging Mike so much.
I do like Mike.
He's
I like
so
Mike
huggable.
really impressed my wife Amy as well, which was good. I mean, she likes Dave as well because she's met him before, but I don't think she'd ever heard of Mike, and suddenly he was there talking about sex stuff.
Talking about sex stuff, has anyone put anything in James's mouth this week?
That's really not. That doesn't sound like horrible. Something's going in it. It sounds like something's coming out of it. James.
Yes, someone has put something in my mouth this week. Thank you for asking, Jane.
And no pressure, James.
That's fine.
But last week.
It's fine.
Was.
It was shit, wasn't it?
Well, I didn't think it was, but I think you felt like you let yourself down.
It was very bad. This week actually is also an apology for a previous put something in James' mouth. It comes from a young man called George Beedham, who lives in Liverpool. And it goes a little something...
like the Beatles?
Yeah.
Are you not going to explain the premise of what this is?
It's one of the Beatles. Well, you have to listen back to when I last did George Beedham... Hold on.
The put something in James's mouth is the nearest we get to sponsorship until someone actually offers to sponsor us. It is your opportunity to, I believe it's called in the business, copy. If you've got something to promote, write some copy that you think might sound funny coming out of James's big, lovely slab of a face, and he will read it out for you. You'll effectively be putting your words in his mouth.
Mm. Use me as your word tool.
Yes.
So,
just email it to...
What?
Just email it to...
Oh, momcast@gmail.com.
One job.
I thought we said just email it to him.
You've got one job.
Shut up.
Go on, James.
So this week is George Beedham. Apparently I fucked up the last one.
I don't remember you doing a George Beedham one before.
Yeah, I did before, apparently. Or it was too long or something. Anyway, George Beedham's put something in James's mouth goes a little something... like this. Primarily, I feel I must apologise if my previous attempt to provide an utterance was too verbose or loquacious for this delivery mechanism. Allow me to attempt to communicate in a more streamlined manner, appropriate to the platform this time around. Comics good. Jambo good comic. T-shirts good. You want Jambo T-shirt? Go to mightyjambo.spreadshirt.co.uk. They good.
Oh, I like that.
That was good. Spreadshirt.
Yeah. Apparently so, yeah.
Spread.
Or one word. spreadshirit.co.uk.
Spreadshit. Shrit.
Sure. Shirt. What did I say?
I think you got it right, James. I think Nick's just hearing what he wants to hear.
Thank you for your words. Thank you for your words, George. And do
listener, if you can tell us who was right there, that'd be excellent.
Do go and buy.
Don't bother, it doesn't matter.
Read the Mighty Jambo and buy his T-shirts. They good.
But thank you, James. That was glorious.
Thank you, Nick.
There was a bit of performance in there. You're sneaking in your range a little bit. You're not just a pretty Ray Winston face.
That's true, and I was able to prove that I'm able to lean both forward and back.
Do your John Romita Jr.
You guys, you're funny guys. Yeah, let me draw you a Spider-Man.
That's changed. That's
I love
been
it,
modified.
Though. I know, he's
years.
Getting a bit more high-pitched. That was lovely, though. I loved it.
Thank you.
I was going to say something, and it was really important. But no, it's gone again. That keeps happening. Mm. It might be dementia.
No.
Almost certainly.
No.
Now I'm really confused. We're both saying different things.
No, we're both saying the same thing, Nick.
I'm more medically qualified than James. I've decided...
Because she's more of a star fucker around hospitals than I am. You're a consultant.
What's a star fucker?
James,
it's gone very quiet. I don't really know what's going on. I should. You can always leave us comments. I mentioned it earlier on Facebook.
Yeah.
It is worth noting that although a few people do listen to us, I'm reliably informed by Google. Martin Eden almost always leaves us a nice comment.
Hi, Martin.
It's normally his favourite. Last week it was his favourite quote of the week. I can't remember of the episode. I can't remember what it was. But hi, Martin. You're awesome.
Aww.
You are awesome, Martin.
The people on Facebook don't really do this Halloween name thing, do they? You should go onto Twitter and check out the Halloween names of all of the comic people. It's always exciting.
James Mom Voorhees. I like Jason. Jason Voorhees.
Who's that?
From
Friday the 13th, I know who it is. I was being silly. He's not even in the first film. Spoiler.
He is in spirit.
He kind of is. I don't know. It's very confusing. It's very, very confusing. I think that's us.
Yeah, that's us.
What have you guys got? Any plans for the upcoming week? You and I need to probably... be starting individually. Jane and I need to be starting to think about what we're going to pack.
Oh, you've had your fucking moment with that. Can you leave it alone?
Got to make sure we've got our favourite clothes for the party on the Saturday
night.
That'd
be good. I have short hair this year, so it won't take me as long
to
get ready.
One of you shits yourself.
That'll be good. That'll be you, James.
You mean like the first year? I didn't shit myself, listener. That was a joke. James didn't seem to realise I was joking, though. I haven't shit myself in at least 5 years.
Oh my god.
I'm trying to remember the last time I shit myself.
There have been some close calls, but
I think it was a hotel in Birmingham about 7 years. I'd had a lot of drink.
I remember the last time you did that, James.
I think we need to go. Listener, as always, you're a delight.
Yeah.
I think we need to go now, you guys.
Bye-bye.
Bye.